Vanilla by Leslie Bruce, with Derek Jacobi as Wyndham.
Midnight. The summer solstice. The sun has set at last, and I am in the pool behind the house, floating in the dark, dazed by stars, the silence singing. Behind me, my hosts make preparation for bed, and their voices drift out through the open windows.
How long is he going to stay? Can't you make him go home?
I'm not sure he has a home.
Floating on my back, in the dark.
We don't lack room here. He's not doing any harm.
He's disgusting.
The water in the pool is warm from the blazing day. It's blood heat. My blood is pool heat. The pool and I are one.
He scuttles like vermin. And the smell. Oh, I want to stamp all over him.
Come to bed.
The light in the house is extinguished, and only the stars are left. My mind opens.
Push! You're nearly there, darling. Just one more push.
Oh. What's wrong? Give me my baby. Is it a boy or a girl?
It's a boy.
Why don't you put him in my arms?
I could hold the pillow to his mouth, Miss Sylvie. He wouldn't feel a thing. I could say he was a stillborn. No one need ever know.
What's wrong with him? He's my child. I want to hold him.
Oh, Miss Sylvie.
My mind opens.
He's my child, and no one shall take him from me.
My mother's breast. They say a baby has no memory, but I remember my mother's breast. My mother's breast was all pervasive. The warmth, the weight, the sweet slippery damp. It was a rightness in all things. Yes, it was pure satisfaction. My mother's breast was the focus of all my ambition. And continue to be so for the next several years.
Sylvia, the child is long past the age for suckling. This is really most unseemly.
What harm in it, poor little soul? It gives him pleasure.
I'll have no more of it. The boy must be weaned at once. Sylvia, it's a year now since I raised this matter. I don't wish to have to speak of it again.
Very well, my dear.
He is 7 years old. The child will go to school and there's an end to it.
Oh, no, don't send him away. He needs me so. They will torment him.
My mother indulged my appetite for as long as she could in the face of opposition from my father. It was the cause, I believe, of some bad feeling between them. But in time, his will prevailed.
If he can't be whole, at least he can be civilized. Come here, boy.
Oh, don't pull his arm. Don't hit him. Be careful.
And my breastless education began.
So, look there, in the corner of the playground.
Oh, where's his arms?
Where's his legs? It's that lump at its back.
Are you a boy?
Dwarf.
I achieved above the average in all of my lessons, except for gymnastics. And in mathematics, I excelled. I might have done well there, but the food was not what I was used to.
He won't eat or drink. He fades away. Look how pale he is. I entreat you. Let me feed him.
It is willful disobedience. He must be made to eat.
Your own son? How can you deny him?
You should have weaned him years ago like any other child. I will not be blackmailed.
If he dies, I shall never forgive you.
I became too weak to go to school, and then I took to my bed. At first, I rehearsed my education in my head and watched the trees through the window. But after a while, the facts seemed harder to recall, and the trees grew very faint and almost faded.
My dearest darling boy, you know I'd never let you starve. See what I've made for you. Take the spoon. Eat. It's good. It's made from milk. The milk you love. The milk I make just for you. Its name is vanilla ice cream. Lullaby and good night. With pink roses bedight, with lilies o'erspread, is my baby sweet head. Lay you down now.
Take half a pint of the milk your mother makes for you. Combine it with a vanilla bean and a portion of sugar in a medium-sized pan, and bring them almost to a boil. Let the flavor of the bean develop. Beat some egg yolks with the rest of your sugar until they are thick and pale, and then combine them with the infusion. Allow them to thicken and leave them to mature. Enrich your mixture with cream from the cow. Then split the bean lengthways and scrape the seeds into the custard. Eat your beautiful vanilla ice when it reaches the consistency of frozen cream.
When tide warms the world, he will frolic in the sun.
Delicious! Is there any more?
What did you do?
I made him an ice cream.
Take your solemn oath on the Bible, Sylvia.
I swear I made him an ice cream.
Mother made ice cream 3 times a day.
Why does he like the ice cream so?
Maybe it's the Mexican vanilla.
I regained my weight and grew fit and strong, and in this way I reached manhood. On my 18th birthday, my mother died.
Oh, it's impossible to sleep in this heat. I must call for fresh linen.
And whiskey for nightcap.
I miss my mother.
Will you share one?
You know I ought not.
My father took me to see a physician.
Your son's failure to eat is a symptom of his present grief. Contrary to expectation, his unfortunate disabilities give him no immunity from bereavement.
Wyndham, my boy, can you hear me? I want you to draw me a picture. Draw what your mother meant to you.
The physician was an art lover.
Very good, very good. What have we here? A breast, is it? Well, well. And a big ice cream. Margaret, get the boy an ice cream.
Combine the milk, vanilla bean, and half the sugar in a medium-sized pan. Bring them almost to a boil.
No! I've come to collect my boy. How is he?
I can't say how he is, or where he is either. I turned my back for an instant and he'd slithered out the door. I gave him a strawberry ice cream.
He only likes vanilla.
I took nothing from the house but myself and the medium-sized pan. I travelled all that day and half the next, and by evening I'd reached a village where I wasn't known. Too weary to walk another step, I begged at the parsonage for a bed.
It would be a Christian act, and he can teach the children mathematics.
He'd give them nightmares, William.
Look at the state of him. Give him a shilling and send him on.
By ill luck, the parson's rooms were taken, but he was kind enough to introduce me to a farmer, who, he said, was in need of a man. The farmer agreed I could sleep in his barn, and the hay smelled sweet. He had no work, though. So, the next day, he took me to Minnie Draper.
I can't keep him on, Miss Anne. On account the hens won't lay, and the milk's all curdled, and the old mare bolted at the sight of him. But he's nimble enough, in spite of his looks, and you could use the help with Jack laid up, and that's a fact.
He's a low-slung, homunculous sort of a man, Jack. But if I could put him in the outhouse, he could clean the grate and chop the logs and do the heavy work. What do you say, Jack?
Take him on, Min. I'm that sick I can't help you myself, although I'd like to. And I'm not afeard I'll lose your love to an ugly man in the outhouse.
Minnie Draper's firstborn died at birth a month before, and she was still too weak to do much heavy lifting. Her husband, Jack, was wasting away in the upstairs room, and no one expected to see him down again. So Minnie made what living she could as a wet nurse, and a meagre sort of living it was. There was no flesh on her bones and no soup in the pot. She had a kind heart, though.
I got nearly used to the look of him and his company for me, Jack. He don't talk and he don't seem to eat. He's not what you'd call a convivial type of a man. But we has our ways of communicating.
Just so long as you're not too lonely, Min.
Oh, no, Jack. I'm not lonely.
I cleaned the grate, and I chopped the logs, and I carried the water from the stream. It was a hard life, but it suited me well enough. I had no expectation of finding better. Besides which, Minnie soon warmed to me, and from time to time would set me on her knee, in just that special way my dear mother had always done. Well, I'd not been living there more than a month when I chanced to meet a traveller on the road. I was collecting kindling, and he was peddling spices.
Sugar? Cream? What's this long black pod? What smells so smoky and sweet? You have been thieving, have you, Wyndham? You'd hardly find this lot for under a shilling.
Take half a pint of the right sort of milk, combine with a vanilla bean and a portion of sugar in a medium-sized pan, and bring them almost to a boil.
See what I've made for you, Jack. Wyndham's been showing me how.
Oh, I can't take nothing fancy, Min. I don't have the stomach for it.
It ain't too fancy, Jack. It's ice cream. You like ice cream. Here, I'll feed you.
Delicious. Is there any more?
Take half a pint of milk, combine with a vanilla bean and a portion of sugar.
Oh, this is the very finest ice cream I've ever tasted, and I think I feel a little stronger. What's making it so special, Min?
Could be. It's that vanilla pod, Jack. Come all the way from Madagascar.
Minnie gave a dish of ice cream to the farmer when he called, to see how our arrangement had taken.
Delicious. Is there any more?
And the farmer mentioned it to the parson, who lost no time at all in dropping by.
My dear young Minnie, what an extraordinary delicacy. You must tell my wife your secret.
Secret, Reverend? Secret is... vanilla.
And it wasn't a month before the whole village had heard about Minnie's vanilla ice cream and found occasion to visit. And before another month was out, the word had spread to the outlying districts. At first, she asked a penny to cover the cost of the ingredients, for, as she took pleasure in pointing out, the vanilla pod was well-travelled and came dear. Then she reasoned that sixpence would be fairer, since wasn't her labour worth as much as any cook's in a gentlewoman's house? And finally she settled on a shilling, because if a man was prepared to journey an hour just to eat it, wouldn't he expect to see its value echoed in its price?
You'll be wanting to give up the wet nursing now, Minnie, since you have a steady income.
Oh, no, Reverend. It warms my heart to have a hungry mouth at the breast.
In the spring of the following year, Jack Draper came downstairs. Ice cream had put the flesh back on his bones and the zest back in his soul, and his lungs were almost clear.
That Madagascar bean of yours is a powerful old energizer, Minnie. That's for sure.
And so I set out on the road again with my pan and 5 gold coins that Minnie gave me, with a tear in her eye. For, as she said, if it hadn't been for my instruction in the culinary art, she never would have made her fortune. Jack said it was all one to him if I wanted to stay on in the outhouse. But Minnie and I would agreed that things just wouldn't be the same anymore. Clouds drift under the stars and over the water. I am mind. All mind. I sewed Minnie's sovereigns into the lining of my jacket and took to the road again. Travelling by day and sleeping in the hedgerows by night, I was steering south, where I hoped the climate would be temperate and more conducive to the outdoor life, and I was in no hurry to find out what fortune had in store for me.
How do you like to have a roof over your head and 2 square meals a day?
What are you thinking of, Tyler? I'm not having no hairy toe the likes of him in my kitchen.
I'm not talking about no kitchen.
2 square meals and a roof, what do you say?
Because fortune is partial, it seems to me. And I hadn't been her favourite up till then.
Roll up, roll up, only a penny a peek. A penny to see the human whom unkless. Roll up, roll up, only a penny a peek.
But my life has been rich in experience. I can say that much. So perhaps I have been favoured in my way.
Poke him with a stick,
for there are those who have sat at home and never seen the world. And I'd be sorry to be in their shoes.
Only a penny a peek.
No, I wouldn't be in their shoes. Not for all the vanilla in Madagascar.
Oh, the poor creature. Look, Jonathan, the shackles have bitten into his flesh.
Come away, my sweet. You shouldn't see such things.
What will you take for him, Mr. Tyler? My husband will pay you.
Alice. You're talking about my livelihood, lady.
I'm talking about a life.
Alice Prosser, on the other hand, had been favoured by fortune since birth, and in every small particular. Her temperament was sweet, her appearance was pleasing, her house was square and well-appointed, with a cook and 2 servants besides to attend to it. Her marriage to a rich young merchant was made out of love, and her infant girl, just 2 months old, was whole and lusty.
Well, I hope you're satisfied, Alice, for you've emptied my purse. And the dwarf is full of vermin.
The one will be cured by a day's business in London, and the other by a good hot bath.
You'd have me bring it home with us?
I believe you like me better when I'm willful.
I hoped for a rapport with Alice Prosser, of the kind I had enjoyed with Minnie Draper. And it's true that Alice made a pet of me. She had her tailor fit me out in silk and wool, and her cook prepared titbits, which she presented from her own hand to tempt my appetite. She fretted when I wouldn't eat, and complained I should soon be unable to walk unaided. But she never set me on her knee. And at 1 mewl for the infant, stirring in its sleep, she would run to scoop it from its cot and cover it with kisses. And all my charms would be forgotten.
Go and find something to amuse you in the garden, there's a dear. I want to feed the baby.
I've seen very few infants up close. Yet the question arises every time, how did such an unsightly thing become the object of so much devotion? It's beyond all comprehension. And of those I have encountered, Alice Prosser's was quite the least inspiring. Its face was grown so fleshy that its eyes glittered out through the narrowest of slits. Its belly was grossly distended, and its navel protruded like a thumb. And its mouth, its naked pink mouth. It drooled a perpetual swamp of curds and viscous spittle. Alice's baby was an abomination.
Oh, there, there, my little beauty. is.
Perverse as such an attachment had seemed to me, Alice's grief at the infant's sudden demise was all-consuming. She found it, lying limp and blue in its cot in the nursery one morning, upon rising. Its pneumatic presence, already much deflated, and was inconsolable. The nurse, of course, was blamed for negligence in its care and dismissed without references. And Alice, who had been so thoroughly pleasing in aspect all the days of her good fortune, now became ugly in grief. She took to her bed and sent away with words of abuse all those who came to comfort her. Her neglect of me, which had been spasmodic, overnight became complete. This was unforeseen and disappointing.
Wyndham, I'm sure you can appreciate that your stay here must come to an end. My wife is sick with loss and can no longer attend to you, and I must go to London on business and am loath to overburden the servants. Here is £20. I wish you no ill.
I moved out of my room in the house, in obedience to his wish, and established myself instead in a folly in the garden. The roof was sound, and the season's fall of chestnut leaves had drifted to form a bed. I had grown unused to sleeping rough in the months I had spent in the house, but I was no stranger to solitude.
Oh, my poor child, my poor little child. If only I hadn't entrusted you to that foolish girl. If only I'd come into you sooner. If only I'd slept with you at my side. If only I'd had you in my arms. Wyndham! What are you doing in my room?
But I carried too great a debt of gratitude to Alice Prosser for the compassion she had shown me to abandon her in her grief, however exaggerated its expression. So at night I slipped into her room. And a pitiful sight I found there. A wraith lay in the satin sheets, its skin transparent with sleeplessness, its body racked with weeping. The ghost of a carefree mother, whose infant had been snatched from her breast. I took her in my arms in the silence of her room, and I offered what comfort I could. If I hadn't had the example of Jack Draper's miraculous cure so recently before me, I might have feared for her. As it was, I knew what I must do. I brought my saucepan in from its place of safekeeping in the folly, nudged cook aside, and practiced once more the skills my mother taught me. Take half a pint of milk, combine with a vanilla bean and a portion of sugar in a medium-sized pan and bring almost to the boil, and so on and so forth. Serve at the consistency of a frozen whipped cream. By day, I infused the bean, and by night, I visited her room. We both grew stronger.
Congratulations to you, cook. My wife seems sturdier on my return. How have you coaxed her?
With ice cream, sir.
Ice cream, indeed. It must be a most nutritious receipt.
Oh, yes it is, sir. It features Indonesian vanilla.
But while Alice Prosser's figure grew rounded and womanly again, her spirits continued to wane. She cried out at night, and by day she set up a perpetual refrain, unintelligible to the servants, but which her husband interpreted as, "Lock the door, lock the door." And as often as he assured her that the dogs would rouse the household should a stranger approach, she would not be quieted. To such an extent that it was her own wailing which set the dogs to whining and yelping. And between her cries and the beast's excitement, the house was turned into a cacophonous region of hell. And the poor man feared joining his wife in her derangement.
Lock the door! Lock the door! Lock the door!
By Christmas Eve, he could endure it no more. And with a heavy heart and a tearful countenance, Jonathan Prosser allowed the parson to lead his wife away to the insane house. I, too, packed up my belongings increased in number now, thanks to the generosity of that unhappy woman, and rented a room on the outskirts of the village. I had £25 besides, stowed away in the lining of my jacket. So I lost no time in sending to London for one of Thomas Master's ingenious ice machines, which was guaranteed not only to freeze the mixture with ice and salt, but also to churn it to a silk-smooth cream as well.
What would a circus freak be wanting with an ice machine?
No matter. He has the money in his purse.
And thus was I equipped to prepare my mother's vanilla ice cream in quantities which would ensure a regular income. I set up a table on the grass in front of my landlady's house, and a new phase of my life began.
And where do you think you're taking that table? You, little dwarf, the furniture stays inside where it belongs.
News of a machine and an uncommon delicacy spread through the village and out to the hamlets beyond, just as it had before. And when it reached the town, queues began to form, which soon stretched out as far as the village green and looped the church before snaking back down to the house again.
I must point out, good man, that I was standing here before you, and I don't expect to be jostled from behind.
I worked day and night, beating up the eggs, infusing the beans, and churning the mixture. And even though I took on the blacksmith's boy, who couldn't work in the forge on account of his withered arm, to turn the drum, the queue never grew any shorter.
You were not jostled, sir. If you had been jostled by me, sir, you would know it. You would not still be standing.
And no one who tasted it ever failed to proclaim it miraculous, and quite unlike any other they had tasted.
Delicious.
Is there any more?
They say the unusual flavour comes from Tahitian vanilla.
My fame grew throughout the county, and the lining of my jacket was soon stuffed as tight as a mattress. But for all the intensity of my labour, I never once failed, in the evening, to take a break from my toil and to visit Alice Prosser, desolate as she was, in her dark corner of the insane house. To sit on her knee and stroke her hair the way I had with Minnie Draper.
Lock the door, please, lock the door.
Until, finally, Sister Agnes decreed that Alice Prosser was just too mad to see visitors any more. And after that, not even her husband was admitted to her cell in the insane house. So I packed up my master's ice machine and journeyed on. And everyone in the village was sorry to see me go and made much of my tender sensibility.
We'll never forget you!
Goodbye! We'll never forget your Tahitian vanilla!
It was at about this time that I first noticed a new and unfamiliar rankness rising from my pores and hanging over me, like flies over swamp. With such success behind me, my ambition knew no bounds, and there seemed nowhere left for me to conquer now, except London. And with my jacket weighing me down and giving me comfort, I felt ready to take it on.
Look at that ugly dwarf, Mother!
Shh!
It's most uncouth to point.
I paid a quarter's rent in advance on a shop in Shoreditch, and set the ice machine on the counter. A sign painter made me a sign for a guinea. It trumped my name in black and gold and creaked when the wind caught it. I found ice and salt for freezing in St. Catherine's Dock, and for those who had silver, as did I, vanilla brought from Polynesia, Tonga, Java and the Comoros Islands, Tahiti, Mexico and Indonesia was easy to be had, merely for the asking.
Look over there, a hairy black creature.
Let's throw stones at him.
Word of my prowess had marched ahead of me, and fashionable young men, each with a fair young woman on his arm and coins in his purse, hovered near my door. And the cousin of an earl made an inquiry. But I was not yet ready to open. I prowled the streets by day and by night. But I still didn't find what I was seeking.
Get your hands off me, you perverted pig face! Be off! I'll get a constable!
The waiting crowd grew restless, but I wouldn't be hurried.
Look here, you smelly little dwarf. I've come here every day for a month. Are you trading or aren't you?
2 penny licks, Dwarf, and a paper of hokey pokey.
My mother's recipe called for milk of a most particular quality, and I had no interest in the rest.
Oh, let's go back to Mr. Minnelli.
By the time the third rent fell due, the groups of young men and their paramours had all dispersed, and still I hadn't made a single pint of ice cream. When at length I was set upon in the street by a footpad who stole my jacket... Oh, no, not my jacket. My landlord put the ice machine out on the street, tore down the sign, and let the premises to a milliner.
Well now, Dwarf, this is a predicament, is it not? And one that calls for an ingenious solution. Wouldn't you say so?
I should have joined the legions of London's unlamented dead, I think, destroyed by my own ambition, had not my misfortune coincided, by chance, with the opening in Dover Street of a brand new hotel, which, it came to my notice, was in need of a kitchen boy.
I shall provide your special ingredient. Only the finest, isn't that right? Only the very best. And you shall come and work at Brown's Hotel.
I had no desire to subject myself once more to the whims of another, but I had no wish neither to perish on the street.
You make ice cream. I want ice cream. I put the means at your disposal. You will be at my disposal. You will be paid, of course. We shall each be useful to the other. Shan't we, Dwarf?
Brown's had been opened by a Mr. James Brown the previous year. It had the financial support of his wife and the practical support of his friend and factotum, Mr. Smiles. Smiles, it seemed, knew everything and could arrange anything.
Take him away, Smiles. Mr. Brown won't want a deformed mute fouling his kitchen.
You'll want this one, Mrs. Brown. This one will bring in every man and woman of fashion in London. Depend upon it. With only just a little help from me.
But the stench, Smiles.
You won't smell it from the cellars.
I became quite fond of my quarters in the basement. It was dark, of course, and not a little damp. But no one ever came down there, except Smiles, and I valued my privacy.
What is it, Smiley? What have you got down there?
Is it an animal, Smiley? What is it?
You keep that door closed and go back to your work. I'm not going to tell you again.
For the first few weeks, there was nothing to do. Smiles had set up the master's ice machine on a bench below a grating. The feet of fashionable London passed overhead. He put in shelves for supplies and a fire for heating the custard, a table to work on and a mattress for my bed. Non-perishables followed in good order. Coarse salt for the freezing process and a sack of the purest cane sugar.
You'll get the rest, Dwarf. Don't fret. I know what's needed. Only the very best.
And Smiles prowled the streets day and night the way I had.
You impudent man, or I'm informing the constabulary.
And I began to wonder if he'd have any more luck than I.
When are you going to tell us what it is?
There's a terrible smell down there, Smiley.
Then, one day in autumn, he appeared with a gross of warm brown eggs nestled in straw, and fragrant vanilla from the finest orchids of Polynesia. Next came ice and a thick white cream from the dairy and a light in his eye that spoke of triumph. I knew then we should soon be ready to begin. I think it's fair to say I surpassed myself. Never had dessert so enchanting been served in London. So seductive to the eye, so capricious to the nose, so honeyed and yielding to the tongue. Brown's took bookings a year ahead for every room in the house, and the queues for the restaurants stretched round the building. I could see the pairs of fashionable shoes, day and night, standing in line on my grating.
I hope this vanilla ice is as good as it's cracked up. I've been waiting here for an hour already.
Oh, you won't regret it. I was admitted yesterday and the experience was sublime.
Open the door. Open the door.
What did I tell you, Mrs. Brown?
How does he do it, Smiles?
He uses Polynesian vanilla.
In winter, the feet on the grating wore boots with fur trim, and the snow settled in white bars on the cellar floor. And in summer, the feet were shod in softest pastel calfskin above golden stripes of sun.
She hasn't come back, James.
Who hasn't, my dearest?
Apart from these small indications, I was scarcely aware of the changing of the seasons.
The vile marchioness, James, you remember, who went out for a hat and never came back. Those poor little motherless twins, not even weaned, you know.
I heard she was seen in Bermondsey with a piano tuner.
For if ever I felt the chill in my bones, I had only to work at Master's machine for a while to power up a sweat. And if the heat became fierce, I could always refresh my brow with salt and ice and my mouth with the pure, cool produce of the churn.
To think there should be such wickedness in England.
It may not have been the perfect life for everyone, but it suited me. And I should have remained content in it for as long as my strength allowed. Had not I fallen out with Mr. Smiles.
The guests are grown weary of vanilla. They want a change.
One might have said we had artistic differences.
I'm having a bushel of fresh strawberries sent up from Kent.
Were it not for the fact that Mr. Smiles was in no respect an artist. Mr. Smiles, it transpired, was a money-grubbing Philistine of the very lowest kind. I shrieked, I stamped, I dug my heels in, but all to no avail. A man who has no fine feelings cannot have them appealed to. And so began a dizzy escalation.
Have you heard? There is to be a new menu. Strawberry has been added to the mixture.
Have you heard? There will be strawberry.
The strawberry ice cream. So banal in its rosy appeal. So vicious in its disguise of its own true lactic nature. Drew crowds even greater than before. Smiles felt himself invincible. He piled abomination upon abomination.
Pistachio cream.
Chocolate parfait.
Elderflower spoon.
Oh, lemon verbena.
What did I tell you, dwarf? What did I tell you?
As if here were not reason enough for despair, my own personal odour, which had for many months been singing ever more loudly, now attained a roar. It grew so rank that it quite overwhelmed my olfactory receptors. And, although it still sustained me bodily, the charms of my mother's original ice cream, with all its sweet mystery and complexity, were slipping away from me. Smiles provided a bath of galvanized zinc and filled it daily, and total immersion drowned the stench. Out and dry, however, I was always putrid, preparing each dish like a blind man painting. But fame was the cause now, no longer the effect. Whatever I gave them, the crowds never diminished.
And my dear, did you know there is sago cream now at
Brown's? Yes, yes, and hartshorn flour.
I began to fear for the future of my special ingredient. It was clear that something must be done. I positioned the table under the bars and stood on a chair on top. It wasn't too long before my fetid stink began to seep through the grating.
I'm sorry to say there is a most foul odour hereabouts.
Indeed, I'd remarked it myself. Perhaps you stepped in something.
And even to those well used to the streets of London, it was at first remarkable.
My dear, I quite wish I had brought my nosegay.
I think it may be coming from the grating.
And then, unendurable.
Well, what do you think it can be?
The corpses concealed in there?
Well, it must be reported to the right authorities.
And the stench is quite
important. Open up! Open up in there!
The constabulary were called to investigate.
We're coming in!
and in the noise and commotion, with the door unbarred, I slipped away.
Show yourself! If there's anyone down there...
Open the door. Open the door.
There seems to be a woman, sir.
That night I took the packet to Calais, taking nothing but my pan, the clothes I wore, and what they contained in the linings.
Look, Mother, there's a monkey on the boat.
France is large and not populous, and a man may lose himself here in relative comfort. I have had my days of glory and don't seek for more. I am an old man now. I have learned to lie low and expect little. I have learned to make peace with the past and to expand my diet. I have experienced little joy, but I have known contentment.
Oh, oh no. Oh, my dear, I think my waters are broken.
Oh, Lord, what must we do?
But even a far distant past may not entirely be forgotten. And so it came about, after all these years, when a young Englishman with a house nearby fell into step with me on a country road and asked me how I'd made my fortune. I would have had him pass me by and let me travel the road alone with only my memories to comfort me, had he not shown a great agitation at the sight of my pan, and began to confide that his wife was in confinement and craved, above all else, ice cream. Ice cream. The words chime out like bells calling me to worship.
Oh, don't go, my sweet. It will be hours yet.
Ice cream. The old desires rise up in me.
What shall I do?
As strong as if they'd never been away. Seep out from the pores of my skin. Cry out from the roots of my tongue. Churn in my bowel and in my very soul.
Lie still and hold my hand.
Ice cream. The true vanilla. Oh, just once more before I die.
Rub my back and talk to me.
I shall take a half pint of the purest milk and combine it with the bean. Yes, the way my mother taught me. And sugar in a medium-sized pan.
Oh, my darling, my little darling. How happy we two shall be when we are three.
How happy I shall be. Milk and vanilla. Vanilla and milk and me. Milk and vanilla. Vanilla and milk.
In Vanilla by Leslie Bruce, Wyndham was played by Sir Derek Jacobi, Sylvia by Adjua Ando, and Jack by Ben Crowe. Minnie was played by Alison Pettit, Smiles by Gavin Muir, and all other parts were played by the company. The director was Claire Grove.